Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So last week, you may recall, we followed that horrible story of the gang rape in India that has caused a deep re-examination of gender roles and morality in that country. Five of the six suspects in that case were taken to a fast-track court hearing today in Delhi that's historical by itself. The court was mobbed by protesters and foreign journalists today. It's a very different situation in a very different but also disturbing story from Steubenville, Ohio, where a party last summer and the apparent video record of possible rape and sexual assault of a less than completely coherent young woman has resulted in the quiet prosecution, quiet, we should say, of two men on rape charges. But in the past few weeks, there have also been some noisy, growing protests accusing the town of a cover-up in this case. I'm joined now by Vicky Banyard, who's professor of psychology at the University of New Hampshire. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So a lot to talk about here, and a lot of it very disturbing. Some of the video kind of gloating over this event that's come out from anonymous sources posting video online suggests that a message of no meaning no doesn't get through in communities like Steubenville, and Steubenville is hardly alone in this, or that asleep or not necessarily completely with it means yes on some level. What gets lost here that this seems permissible on some level?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and I think the way you framed it is the way we need to be thinking about it, which is not trying to look at any one specific news story or any one specific instance, but really backing up and looking at the big picture of how many of these kinds of stories we're hearing from communities around the world really dealing with this issue of sexual assault and sexual violence and the context in which that happens. And I think what we know from the research, research that I've been part of and that many colleagues around the world have been engaged in, is really that we still struggle as a world society, in our own individual communities, with these broader problems of myths, of norms and attitudes related to sexual violence that both facilitate or allow these kinds of things to continue to happen in our communities, and also make it very challenging for victims and survivors to come forward, and that we're still very much grappling with. We like to think that maybe this is something we've solved, but we really haven't.
Solved? Oh, my God. Let's talk about the myths for a moment. I mean, a teenage boy, even an under teenage boy, can go on the internet today, right, and get any number of free pornographic video examples of supposedly women wanting all kinds of violence wreaked upon their bodies, and take that message from the internet as the prevailing social mores. It seems like the world we live in now is insane compared even to my generation.
Well, I think the rape myths are persistent and they're the same, but yes, the tools that can reinforce those messages have gotten very plentiful. And as you say, whether, you know, going on the internet, and there are all kinds of sources of sources of information that can reinforce those myths. And some can come from the internet. Some research has shown come from the way media can cover stories. Some comes certainly from the role models, adults, peers, other people that are in people's communities, all of those different places. And it's not just young men, it's also young women. So it's everyone in our communities are really getting those reinforced messages that no doesn't mean no, that when someone is too incapacitated to give consent, that isn't a problem. The myth that victims make these things up. And, you know, I know in my own research, one of the things that we look at is about how much people think there's false reporting of sexual violence. And the perception or the myth is that false reports happen all the time and are quite plentiful, when in fact the research that people have done suggests that it's very rare for these things to be falsely reported. And in fact, when you look at what victims and survivors go through when they do actually come forward about what's happened to them, you can see that it's very difficult for people to come forward and say that this has happened to them, and that people would not do this lightly. So I think there's a lot of things that are promulgating these kinds of myths, and we really need to be dealing with them.
I just wonder, as a researcher, how you even begin to. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, you go on TV, you see superheroes, you see Superman, you see Batman. So what do? We played Superman and Batman and cowboys and Indians, and all those complicated messages were played out in on the playground. Now you go to the movies, you see guns, you see violence, you see shooting, you see sex, right? And we're surprised that kids are making videos of themselves shooting guns and playing at these sort of sexual roles that they see throughout culture. I mean, I'm sounding like someone from the Family Research Council here, but the frustration is palpable.
Right, and I think it's complicated to try to say where exactly, you know, I guess as I was trying to say earlier, the source of these attitudes come from lots of different places. So these kinds of myths about sexual assault and how we treat victims and survivors and why we as a community continue to, allow these kinds of things to happen is very complicated, and that's been going on for a long time. And there are just lots and lots of different tools that help to continue to promote those problematic community attitudes. So I think that what we need to be thinking about is, moving forward, what do we do about this? And I think that's where we start to think about, where are we having the conversations about what healthy relationships are? How are we having the conversations and really taking a hard look at the kinds of comments that we tolerate as communities, the kinds of myths that we allow to go unquestioned? And it's not just in movies and media and online, though those are some places where you can find those, but it's also in everyday conversations, in the role models and the things that people see played out among the people that they look up to, whether those are the peers or adults or what have you.
As a beginning, and we just got a minute here, and I hate to sort of end on this note, but as a beginning, does the conversation start with, here's how you behave appropriately on social media? You know, you shouldn't talk about who's hot and who's not. Are those conversations parents deliver, teachers deliver? Is that the new sort of sex ed mission at this point?
It's everybody. So basically, we need a multi-pronged, multifaceted approach that takes these issues very seriously and starts having these conversations in a real and meaningful way, not just in a 50-minute workshop, everywhere. Among parents, among community members, in schools, and across the lifespan, not just at one particular point.
Well, give us some advice here. We'd love to know stories in your lives out there. 877-8-MY-TAKE. How do you start this conversation? What would you do as a response to the Steubenville, Ohio case or the case in India? Post a comment at thetakeaway.org. We've been speaking with Vicky Banyard, who's a professor of psychology at the University of New Hampshire. Thanks so much, Vicky.
Hey, thank you.